We all have different things that we do to clear our heads, I think. You know, when you're frustrated, or when you're upset about something, or annoyed, maybe you have a certain practice. I don't know, maybe you do. I know that I do. I like to go running when I need to clear my head, and I like to garden, because there's very few things as satisfying as being in complete control of another living thing. And when I'm pulling weeds out of a garden, I can see something getting done, you know. I don't know, what do you do when you're frustrated and you need to clear your head? Seriously, what do? You go for a walk? What else? You clean? My mom cleans too. And I sometimes would hear pans and things getting banged at night, like 2 or 3 in the morning when she was frustrated about something growing up. What else? What do you do when you're frustrated? You go biking? Good to get some exercise in, work it off that way. What else? What comes to mind? Cook? Yeah. Feeding, eating, cooking, making something, preparing something. What else? Choir? Anybody? You guys don't get frustrated about anything, right?
Do the laundry.
Do the laundry? I had a friend in college when he was really upset about something, he would iron. He would iron. Get the wrinkles out of stuff. What else? Anything else come to mind? What do you do as an organist when you're upset? What do you think? Play music? Yeah, that sounds pretty typical, I guess, you know. Well, I'm sure every one of us has some practice that we do when we're upset about something, you know. When you want to throw your hands up and say, to heck with this, you know, when you're fed up, when you want to clear your head. You know, my neighbor likes to work in his garage. As I said, my mom liked to do housework and clean. But I remember explicitly when I was growing up, my dad, he really liked to go fishing. He liked to go fishing. He would grab the poles, the tackle. He'd go down to Shorty's Bait Shop in Kellogg, Minnesota, and get a little styrofoam container of night crawlers, and then I think probably a six-pack of Michelob, and he would go out and he'd hit the streams. And my parents were with me this past weekend, so I've been thinking about them a lot. All of this makes me think about our story today. Because as we hear, the disciples basically say, to heck with this. Peter says, I'm going fishing. I'm going fishing. Let's go back to the way things were when we were comfortable doing what we knew how to do. Let's go fishing. Let's go fishing. And this is after Jesus had died, after Jesus was resurrected, after Jesus had shown up to them 2 times. And they were probably frustrated. They were probably worried. But Jesus, from the shores of the seas, reels them back in, showing them what God's grace looks like, and in turn, what it means to be disciples, even though his time with them was coming to an end. This is an Easter story. It's a resurrection story. It's a story beyond the tomb about how being a disciple means you can't really go back to the life you had before you were a disciple. It changes you forever. So I want to talk with us just a little bit about this, and then we're going to hear from Joan and Dick Gaith a mission moment about them getting to really live out their lives as disciples. And I think that could be a word of hope for us as a congregation and really an inspiration as we have helped send them to do some really great work in the world. And we're really proud of them. So just very briefly about our story, it begins by telling us that, something the disciples did not know, that Jesus was going to appear to them a third time. That's what John's gospel says. It tells us there must have been some sort of gap between when they saw him in that upper room. In the story last week about doubting Thomas, Jesus appeared 2 times. And Thomas basically had said at that time, I won't believe that he's back unless I touch his scars, the ones on his hands and the ones in his side. In the story today at the Sea of Tiberias, the disciples had gathered, and Simon Peter, the one who at a time refused to let Jesus wash his feet and who would deny him 3 times, seems even more fed up, really fed up. And you know, why wouldn't he be fed up at this point? Things weren't good. He was probably losing his mind. You see the resurrected Lord come back to you multiple times. You're probably wondering if you're seeing things, because they had seen him on the cross. The world that they lived in was dangerous. There were people that wanted them dead. We heard about this last week in the story about doubting Thomas. It was dangerous outside of that upper room, the locked door. The people that were outside there were the same people that executed Jesus, the same people that sent him to his death. So Simon Peter, in a sense, throws up his hands and says, I'm going fishing. I want to go back to life the way it was. And the rest of the disciples say, us too. Let's go back to our old jobs as fishermen. So, along with six other disciples, Simon Peter heads out, gets on a boat, they go out to sea. They fished all night and nothing. Zilch, nada, no fish, not even a minnow, not a bite. What a crummy night. Sounds like it was not a very productive night at all. We hear at daybreak, there's a stranger that's on the shore that shouts to them, "Children, you have no fish." Well, Captain Obvious, you know. The answer is no. We have no fish. You know, thanks for pointing that out, guy. Now imagine these disciples. They were fishermen. They were broken. At least some of them were fishermen in their past lives before they met Jesus, who made them fishers of people. Now they return to the waters that baptized them before they met Jesus, the salty air blowing on their faces, the familiar smells and tastes and sounds. Kind of sounds like it's pretty nice. But there's no fish in the net, and it's dawn, and there's nothing for breakfast from the night before. There's no sense of purpose or fulfillment or even fun. They just lost. That's all they did was they lost. The past is a reminder of how things aren't the same as they were before. In a sense, the disciples were defeated. Not only did they lose Jesus, but now they're failing at the thing that they felt called to do at one point in their life. Okay? I don't know if you've ever felt like that before. Like you thought your purpose was to start a business, or to go to school, or to go down one particular path, but then it all just crumbles and falls apart. So they're busted, they're hollow shells, they are not the same people they used to be, not the same old fishermen. But then this stranger shouts from the shore, "Cast the net to the right side, you'll catch some." And they did. They caught so many fish, in fact, that the net almost burst. So many fish that seven grown men with a history of fishing could not get the nets into the boat. One of the disciples we hear recognizes the man on the shore as Jesus and says, "It's him." And as soon as Simon Peter heard this, he throws on his clothes. We're not sure exactly what's going on there. But he swims towards Jesus. And the other disciples, they haul in the catch. When everybody reached the shore, Jesus has things prepared. A campfire is set up. There's a fire, there's fish, there's bread. He asks them to bring in some of the fresh catch that they had. They open up the net. There's 153 fish, all different shapes and sizes. And Jesus invites them, essentially, to the first fish fry for breakfast. After the meal, he speaks with Simon Peter, the one that had thrown up his hands and said, "I'm going fishing, I'm getting out of here." And Jesus says, "Do you love me?" Simon Peter says, "Yes, Lord, I do." And then he asks him and says, "Feed my lambs." And then he asks him a second time and says, "Do you love me? Are you sure?" Simon Peter says, "Yes, Lord, you know I do." Jesus says in return, "Then feed my sheep." And then a third time, "Simon Peter, are you sure you love me?" And rightly so, Simon Peter felt a little bit hurt by this, because maybe he felt unheard. He says, "Lord, come on, you know I do." To which Jesus replies, "Then feed my sheep, follow me." On this Sunday, I think this is a really powerful scripture. It's an Easter story, and we are in Eastertide now. It's a resurrection story from empty nets and empty bellies to full nets and full bellies. It's a story that has to deal with what it means like to live a new life as a follower of Jesus in the wake of the empty tomb. You know, Simon Peter and his friends had longed for the life they had before, but things were complicated. Things were rough. So they said, "I'm going fishing." In other words, they wanted to go back to the life they had before they knew Jesus. But they come up short and they realize life can't be the same. Even though they have muscle memory and the skill to catch fish, they came up with empty nets and hearts. And then they see this one that taught them there's more to fishing than the thrill of the hunt, so to speak, than bringing home the spoils from the night before, than feeding yourself or your friends. And they remember that things can't be the same as they were before they saw him up on the cross, and they hear about the empty tomb, and he appears to them. And that is when they experience the abundance of what God has to offer to them. the resurrection story of death to life to new life. And in this story, I think it's a resurrection story because by telling them to pull in the fishing net loaded with fish, and Simon Peter and the others reuniting with him on the shore over a simple meal of fish and bread, they remember who they are and whose they are. They remember how God's grace and love and joy is abundant like a net full of fish. They remember the Last Supper with Jesus. They remember that to live life as a follower of his means you have to remember your past, yes. You've got one, but you live differently now. You don't fish for yourself, but you fish for other people. Feeding sheep, tending lambs, taking care of others. And we're going to hear about that. When they plop those 153 juicy fish onto the shore at breakfast time, I like to think they see the diversity of fish. You know, I don't think they reeled in just a bunch of bluegills or sunnies. I'm sure there were all different kinds of colors and types and fish uniquely made. You know, a testament to creation. I would hope the variety reminded them of all the different kinds of people that God calls to be God's disciples. Maybe even like this church. You know, as the disciples sat down on the shore with Jesus for breakfast and he tells them to bring some of the freshly caught fish over for breakfast, the old fish and the new fish, the fish he already had on the shore and the fresh ones are mingled together. And they're mingled together to create a new dish, one dish. In a sense, it's kind of like a church when we have visitors come and we have new people here. The old meet the new. And that's a word of hope, I think, for us. And one last word I'd like to leave you with. Think of what Jesus tells Simon Peter on the shore. Peter had denied Jesus three times before he died, before Jesus died. But now he affirms him three times. He says, even to the one who walked away before Jesus was crucified, and the one who would throw up his arms and say, to heck with this, I'm going fishing. He says, you are welcome here, but know that following me means you're changed forever. You are irreversibly changed. You are not the fisherman who looked out for himself anymore. You are the fisherman who is called to feed my lambs, to tend my sheep, to care for the flock. It means that things are going to be different. It means that we care for you and you care for us. And that's a word of hope for all of us gathered in this thing we call a congregation. Most of all, perhaps, the hope of the gospel for all of us, whether you're somebody that is brand new here, whether you're a visitor, whether you're somebody that spent your whole life here, is that Jesus shows the disciples what God's grace looks like. It is an abundance that's poured out for us when we least expect it, when all hope seems to be gone. When you wonder what the heck you're doing sitting on a boat. When there's no future, when there's no breakfast, when there's no sense of direction in your life, the hope is that Jesus always shows up on the shore and points us to an abundance that we didn't think we had, and then invites us to share a meal with him. And it's my hope that we, as a congregation of friends and families of all different stripes and shapes and configurations and folks from all different walks of life and faith, good fishermen and bad, that we can live a life of abundance, that we can shout to each other from across the shores, invite each other to sit down and share a meal. So maybe think about that this week. Is there somebody you need to catch up with? Is somebody that you would like to maybe have a meal with? Maybe that doesn't have to be a meal, like you're sitting down having a fish fry. Maybe it just means calling somebody up and checking in on them. Now, I know I sent a bunch of letters and stuff out this week. I've been trying to send out emails and call people, but I'm one person. So maybe we could do that for each other. So we can live a life of abundance. We could shout to each other from across the shores, invite each other to sit down and share a meal, to care for one another, to tend for Jesus' sheep, to feed his sheep, to feed his lambs together as a church. That's my hope for you. So amen? All right.